On this week's show, flying through construction with Robert Brown from Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. That's right, DFW.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started The Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, Jacob, my boy, how are you? You're high on my list right now. You might be low on Robert's. We'll get to Robert in a second, but you might be low on Robert's, but you're high on mine because I think we're going to have some fun today.
I think we're going to have some fun too. I mean, the world is like imploding. It's snowing in Florida, but let's have some fun, right?
What a week, right? It snowed in Florida. It snowed in New Orleans.
Charleston. The South is freaking out. You guys get any snow in Dallas?
No. A little bit.
A little dusting, huh? Yeah, well, you know, it's going to the wrong place, man. We need it here up in the mountains of Colorado. We know what to do with it. You guys just buy all the bread and the milk and
milk sandwiches.
Bread, milk sandwiches, and you're done. So
I recently talked to some project team members at Commodore Builders. They told me about their assistant superintendent spending an entire week copying from spec books into spreadsheets while their PM would lose sleep over missing something in his contracts. Does that sound familiar? Well, then they got Document Crunch. With Document Crunch's Crunch AI, they were automatically able to create project playbooks for kickoff. They were chatting with their project documents to quickly get reliable answers to questions. That superintendent isn't spending a week in her spec book, and the PM, he has the confidence of getting it right every time. And best of all, you can now find Document Crunch within Procore, right where so many of you already work. Check out this video at documentcrunch.com/contactcrew and sign up for a demo while you're there. You'll thank me for it.
All right, Robert, say hello to everybody. And you got your hat on, you got your PPE on. We're moving this morning.
Yeah, man. I don't know what Jacob told you, but hey, man, I'm still grinding down there. I can't stand him, Jeff. But look, we're going to have fun on the call in spite of. So happy to be here, man. Thank you, God, for inviting me. Looking forward to a great, great session today with you guys.
All right. So, Robert, you know, talk to me a little bit about your history. How'd you get here? What do you do these days? Like, you know, you're obviously in a construction trailer, it appears, or somewhere close, you know, to the job site because you got the PPE on. So give us a little bit of your background.
Man, I tell you what, if you never heard me speak, you're going to laugh. But when I come out of college playing football, thinking I was going to add some million-dollar hands, that didn't work, of course. Well, I was getting ready to open up this business, and my wife's uncle was like, hey, come work with me. Okay, cool, whatever. So it was surveying. I didn't know nothing about surveying. And so we went out to this one job site, and it's funny, we were out in a wooded area, and I already saw a snake on the way. And we got over there, and he's talking about, get out. I'm like, you crazy. I'm not going out there. So needless to say, I started this business in land surveying, and I come through the ranks. So doing a lot of oil field stuff. I'm from West Texas, Midland, Odessa. Friday Night Lights, baby. So come through doing a lot of oil field stuff. You know, you work a lot of overtime, a lot of hours. Coming through the ranks, done the real chainman, instrument man, become a party chief. Survey tech, all business up and down. Eventually he said, look, I'm married. I got kids. Hey, look, I got to get some a little bit more stable. Around 1996, moved to Dallas-Fort Worth. Moved here with the Texas Department of Transportation. And yes, I was miserable. And then I was on my way home one day, and I saw I shouldn't have been doing what I was doing, but I saw a job opening at DFW Airport, and that was in 96. It was actually still 96, and applied for it, and been here ever since. And that was as of January 97. Here's the best part of it. There's where we all gonna have a good laugh. 2017, you know, I'm in the survey business. I'm a senior tech lead guy, enjoying life. And I was carrying this box of box of school supplies. The lady up front asked me, can you bring it? So I'm carrying it up there. And the ladies, my VP at the time said, when are you going to get out your comfort zone? I don't know if I'm supposed to cuss, so I'm going to be real PC today. I was like, what the heck are you talking about? Get out the way, man. This school for this box of supplies heavy. And he said, look, this is who I want to run the program. Cool, whatever. They went to lunch. I mean, lunch at my desk. And he come through after that. And this is where I almost see if you can relate to what I'm about to say. I'm sitting up, I'm a survey tech, I'm eating lunch, and my VP come over to get to my office now and walk off. Your demeanor right there let me know. Everybody who's listening or whatever knows, if somebody come to you and say that, dude, I had 1,001 thoughts. What did I do? What have I done? You know, what did I put out? Dude, it's just all over the place. Well, my boss at the time was like, what was that? I'm like, I was sitting here just like you. I have no idea. So we walked into the guy's office and he looked at my boss and said, can I help you? Did I ask you to come in here? He said, get out. I want to talk to Robert. So now the mindset that I had going in there has elevated even more. Because I'm like, what did I do? He said, I'm just messing with you. He said, I want you to run this BIM program. Okay, Jeff. Now, me and Jacob done had some laughs, so you'll see why he'll tell you this is going to be a fun call. I looked at the guy and I said, what the heck is BIM? What I know about meets and bounds, bearing in distances, asthma, and all of that, I have no idea what BIM. He's like, BIM information modeling, you know. I'm like, no, I don't know. And I said, first off, you done scared the heck out of me coming in here. My heart beat, and I said, come on, man, don't do me like that. So needless to say, that was 2017 is when we started our digital transformation, it actually started in 2011 with our first BIM model without any governance and stuff like that. But the formulation of the program to make sure we didn't get projects like that anymore was in 2017. And ever since then, I've started all of our digital transformation from that period and to where we are today.
So that is awesome, Robert. And I kind of like it because that's like how I told my dad when I wrecked the car. I came in and said, Dad, I wrecked the car. And he freaks out and I go, oh, well, actually, I just scratched the bumper and dented it. And he's like, oh, all right. So he got you all scared. So you'd say yes to anything because you just were glad you were in trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you could go back to that day, would you walk out or would you stay in? That's my question.
Man, I got to tell you this. Meeting guys like yourself, Jacob, and the network that we're in, I wouldn't change nothing for nothing in the world, man. It's an awesome network. It's awesome to go present with these guys and break bread, talk about all the things that we go through, the technologies, where are we at? I don't know how people wouldn't like the industry we're in, man. It's a real awesome industry that we're in.
I fully agree. So talk to me a little bit. So 2017, you don't even know BIM, and now you're running it. What was that like?
If I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm gonna tell you a little bit more of the story, and then I want you to ask that question again. Because 2017, I started the program. They moved me from a cubicle, gave me my own office. We started writing the standards. So we put out our first standards manual, did our first iteration of a digital twin, which that's a conversation we really need to have about that. And the VP who asked me to create that left, took another job. So they brought in a VP who was ready to retire and who was like, when you ready to retire, I don't want you ruffling my feathers. Don't bring all this new stuff, you know. So he was just want to retire. Nothing against him. I would be the same way. Well, he said, Robert, I don't want to hear about all this technology stuff. You go back to survey. Now, mind you, we've initiated some projects. We got all of this stuff open that's ongoing. I've created a drone program at an airport of our size. So I got a lot of this stuff that happened, and they send me back. As I go back, me and my boss that I went back to was just butting heads. There was nothing good with me and him anymore. He felt like, you know, somebody done took something from him. I mean, they did. And so it wasn't good. Well, needless to say, a lot of the projects were happening. They was like, hey, what are we going to do? Robert, we got to have you back. I'm like, that's not my problem. You told me to come back. I went back. Needless to say, I ended up having to come back. And so if you ask me that question, now I'm going to tell you, it was very hard. It was very hard. And a lot of people in technology think that people that speak or people like us who are on calls like this, or we speaking, that it's always been just whistles and bells. Dude, it's been so hard. It's been so hard. Many, many, many days of failure. Sometimes I smile, sometimes I don't. I've had to learn to handle hard things better. I've had to handle rejection better. Have to handle fear of, trying to please people in a very high political industry, how to please them and trying to keep my job every day that I don't get sent back to something. So, Jeff, you want to answer that question, brother? That's a podcast in itself.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually it's really interesting because if you were talking about the network and the people that we grew with this, there wasn't really paths for any of this, right? The idea of innovation is creating this own path, and it's never easy. You're always trying to prove the worth, and the majority is out there to say no. And so it sucks at times because you're passionate about it. You know, you see what it could be. So you pour your heart and soul into it. And then all of a sudden there's the people that say no, and you have to start over and you have to go a different direction. And I think that also brings a lot of this network together because we all kind of have those times where the brick wall has been right in front of us and we've been sent back down to the minor leagues and had to, you know, find a different path. So I think that's, you know, I love hearing that story, especially on here, as other people are listening, understanding like, yeah, it doesn't come easy, but when you start getting into those innovative sides and you really do start, you know, making the strides and making differences, you know, the pleasure at the end is so much better than the pain during the process. So now you've been running this for 7 years, well, on and off, I guess. Would you say that you guys are gotten to a point where it's a little bit more of a smooth running machine now? Or are you guys still just trying to figure things out? I mean, it's technology, it's innovation. We always are trying to figure things out. But how do you think it's like now looking back, how do you guys feel like you're doing now with all the BIN program?
Well, now, I mean, there's true executive buy-in. We've created a BIM task force. And so now I have 20 plus people working for me. And as you can imagine, Jacob, we've had some conversations. I'm in a unique situation and where a lot of the things that we've done since I've been here has always been a capital development program. So I've had, probably shouldn't say this, it's gonna get me beat up by somebody, but we've had funding for me to play with things to get us to where we are. And that's a very unique situation. And I'm very appreciative of DFW Airport for going through the struggles with me and believing in it and still riding with me to this day. And so now, as you try to optimize, make things better, present new things, it's a lot easier to do that because of that executive buy-in and because of that executive vision. So for that alone, I'm stoked.
That's awesome. I mean, because so many of the folks that are listening have been through, Robert, what you went through, and they honestly didn't make it back, right? We've seen a lot of those people come and go, and I learned this early on in this process. First of all, I was one of those techs that came from the outside the industry and got here, and I was like, it's all sunshine and rainbows. This is going to be easy. And then you realize, like, wait a minute. Like, this is not your office sales job or real estate agency. They need some email. This is the real deal. There's a lot of work to be done. So, and I've heard this over, you're one opinion and one leader away from being tanked, the whole thing being gone. And it's funny because you say it's hard, and I get on stage a lot, and it would be a lot easier if I just said, oh no, it's easy, we know the route, let's go. But the truth of the matter is, anything worth doing is hard to do. So, but what I love is you guys went through that process to realize the way to strengthen it is to get the complete buy-in. Then there's no one point of failure that can say, nah, go back to what we used to do. We're just not going to do it that way. You know, that old, we tried change once, didn't work, we're good. But you hit on something else that I think you said you might get in trouble for it because you've got funding to play. But honestly, through this process, I've learned more and more that play and time to think and investment from an organization around that actually opens up opportunity for true innovation and change. That's where it comes from. And not every one of them is going to work, right? Like the thing about play is we play around and we find out a lot of times, that didn't work. But in the end, we find out things that work. So talk a little bit about how that process, and you said, 20 plus people working for you now. Talk about how you incorporate that play and use that funding to drive change.
Y'all see me smiling. I'm laughing because we on here say play, but I always tell people it's play until it's implemented. Then it ain't as fun anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point, right? Innovation hits a point where you go from innovation to implementation, and it's got to go from sort of a good idea to real change management and et cetera. So, but the play hopefully gets people excited enough to make it through the implementation.
Well, play is also allowed to fail, right? At that point, you're allowed to fail. Yeah. You find out it's not right. You go and implement it and it fails. Oh, there's a lot more consequences at that point too.
Totally different story, right? Yeah. So that one right there, and that's, a lot of people think, man, you get to go speak, you get to go do this. And I'm like, you don't understand. Once you get past proof of concept and you implement it, you're on the line. You're the one who's going to make these executives look at this, look at innovation and things like that, and either positive or negative. That, we ain't really no in between on that at that level. So you got it. I put it to the guys this way. I feel by the time I actually take something to my leadership as past proof of concept, man, I have broken that sucker so many times. I've done so much that I'm not just going to bring this to you just because I may get funding. It can't be like that. It has to be something that improves our operational efficiency. If it doesn't improve some, if it doesn't make something better, then why are you playing? Why did you even try it?
You are construction technology vendors, either worst nightmare or best friend, because you're gonna absolutely prove their value and be able to go sell it over and over, or you're gonna break it and they're just gonna go home like, oh, we didn't think about that.
Actually, Jacob, you hit on something else I wanted to talk about there, because the one opinion, one leader thing is actually just as bad for us coming from the software side, because we can get a foothold and we want to grow. And, you know, we've got a person and a champion, and that champion leaves. And I mean, my tech folks listening will know, then it dies on the vine. So that's also why it's important to have a culture where you get places. But breaking things and really putting them through the ringer, that's gold on our end. If we can figure it out, if we can work with you and figure out your mindset and then capture that operational efficiency, then it's something, you know, as a team, a software team can bring it to other places, can really replicate that. So we need it. But I bet you're not doing as much of that yourself anymore. Now that you have people, what's that change been like? You were a BIM department of one, and now you're actually a department.
Well, it's funny you asked that, because each one of my team members work on different things, and they're very busy. We're working on a deal now about, you know, tracking about, and let's just say assets. And dude, Jeff, you and Jacob, y'all just don't understand, man. That's so much that I could talk about right now. Y'all brought me into this call with so much data and so much things that we deal with in 2025, man. As you know, I'm gray haired. You know, I've got 30 plus years in the whole industry. Dude, there's so much now that is different. And when I say that, as I assign things to my various team members, each one of them get a little pocket. Hey, I need you to work on this, work on that. It's funny, because I think because I come through the ranks, that my expectations are super, super high. And that, don't come tell me something didn't work. Why didn't it work? Are you just being a lazy bum? What is it? You know what I mean? It's not about overtime. It's not about that. But did you do everything possible to make that work? You know what I mean? If you guys are vendors, and no, I always say I'd usually get about anywhere 2, 3, 4 proof of concepts a year that my leadership allows me to do. I don't believe in you coming to me and I not do my due diligence to make sure that I provide you the best answer about your product. So if I got 20 plus and they're working on different things, I challenge them to make sure that you give me the best story, that if I'm going to go tell your story, it better be a good story.
Oh, man, you hit on so many things there. You know, you're kind of doing to them what was done to you in pulling you into that room, or the person that said, when are you going to get out of your comfort zone? You're keeping them just outside of their comfort zone, just pushing to the edge, which is where, you know, true innovation lives, right? It's not the bleeding edge. You're not falling over and you're not sitting back and waiting. You're right on that edge, and it brings the best out of people. But I love to hear you say storytelling. Because in the business, and by the way, Robert, we didn't talk before. I did vendor side. I've done contractor side. I actually go back and forth because I figure it's a good way to just know what's going down. So I agree with you. When I go to the other side, I'm like, we got to be hard on them. We got to crush them. But storytelling, it's amazing that now fun has come out. Storytelling's come out. What's that storytelling process like? When you're challenging those folks to give you something?
That part is something that's very non-standard and very unpredictable. And I'm glad we're on a technology show, because you know, let's see, what can I do? I got so much that I'm doing right now. I'm trying to stay away from digital twins, because I know my buddy over here, he's going to try to bait me in on something. I know. So...
that's why I bring owners onto the podcast.
I'll give you an example. So we were doing a scan to BIM of one of our terminals, and 7 floors, over 2 million square feet of just a building, and the garage is over 2 million square feet. Well, we had an export from our CMMS. That export, so you just heard me tell you about the size. They gave us 7 switch boxes. Now, if you know, after we got over 700 that we found, then you can imagine what I would have to try to make that story be on the asset survey on the scan to BIM side. Now, I want to make sure people hear me saying scan to BIM. I don't want to associate scan to BIM of an existing versus new construction, because totally different animal. Totally different animals. When you can't get behind the walls and things like that, it's a totally different animal trying to make this come to vision. So, Jeff, if you want to know that story changes, because I went into that story thinking I got survey experience. Ooh, I know how to traverse. I know how to scan. I'm going to knock this out. Yeah, I got punched. I got Mike Tyson. You know what I mean? Once again, we talked about failure. We talked about handling hard things, right? Because now we're going to take this facility and we're going to try to do something with this facility and take it in a world beyond BIM. You see how I'm going to take that little buzzword out about people in the industry talking about digital twins, and if we were to ask seven different people, we get seven different definitions. So I'm just going to say, Jeff, that realm beyond the 3D model to BIM, where we can start integrating things. I'll just say it that way. So if I'm going to tell that story to take it from here to there, man, that's hard to tell what that story is, because what are the challenges that's making my page turns have to go back and forth? So kind of a hard question. Easy question, but a hard question.
I think the storytelling comes back to, and this is a discussion that Robert and I had, is stakeholders too, right? What are we doing that improve the stakeholders, the people, like you said, the realm beyond the BIM, the people running the facilities, doing this day in and day out? 3D is great. What does it do for them? You know, the idea of the digital twin is beyond the idea of just what we have. It's how do we help those stakeholders? And I think as you started doing certain things, you started uncovering issues that made the stakeholders' lives harder. They were tracking seven switch gears for over two million square feet. And it's insane, right? Like, that's just outrageous. How do we ensure that our process actually improves their day-to-day lives? And that's a lot of why Jeff has me on the show. I talk about facility management. I bring in people like you, Robert, because there is this different mindset on the owner side that a lot of us in design and construction push our technology and say, you guys should use it. You guys should use it. You should use it. But it doesn't improve operations and building operations. So we always have to align. And that's the story right there. Being able to sell that story and align the story, you know, the stakeholders with a value proposition of why they want to do this, that's when they can start buying it.
So let me throw some at y'all, and y'all do this show and y'all talk to a lot of people. Okay, so if we're doing digital twins or whatever, and I've gotten hit in the chest with the mallet, thinking, man, I got this pretty picture, and then I go out here and do all this work, and do none of this is actually relevant. So guess what? I have to spend time now in doing data alignment, making sure that across our whole ecosystem that assets have the same unique identifier in the CMMS and whatever the program, because what is the purpose of digital twins or whatever is to bring all these dots out in the world and bring them into one. I hate the word single source of truth. Sorry.
It's not a single source of truth. Yeah.
So you bring all of this to where I want you to exist where you are, but I want to bring it to somewhere where we have some commonality, where I'm not good at Revit, but I can still see what has been produced and I can use it. I have a group of facility management techs who I got a guy just started. He don't know what's on level 4, but if I'm a manager and I can help him from a remote on an iPad, then that's part of what we're trying to get to, right? But that's the type of things that we, you know, you get started and, man, you get these hits like a mallet in the chest, man. And you're just like, I thought we were further along. And then you get into it, you're like, man, this sucks. Because there's so much data. And what's the data alignment? How do you make sure that the data that you're putting into whatever you're doing is right? And so I see people who are doing it, but I don't see people telling the true story of what they're going through. Let's get past the pretty picture. Let's have a conversation.
Well, I love that, because that's what we don't do. And Robert, now I'm going to help you really beat up on Jacob whenever you want, because you just hit me right in my heart, because I have been saying this, and Jacob can tell you, for years, I don't believe in the digital twin. I believe in the data twin. Right? That there is data that it requires to operate. I don't know that a facilities management person needs a 3D scan of, you know, just to run and know what filter they need to change in an HVAC unit to know how to operate certain things. You don't need a 3D model for that. I just need the data, and I need it accessible. And this whole single source of truth, right? We're never going to get to one data pot. It's just not going to happen. We have to have connected data ecosystems. And by the way, you can't tell me my truth. You can have access to the data, but my truth is based on my perspective. Robert, you run the facility, and you work in and for the airport. Your perspective is for the airport, not only in the construction of new things, but in the operations. That trade contractor that's out there, that GC, their focus is only building it. They forget a lot of times. I mean, we have to challenge them not to forget it. It's funny. A friend of ours in the network, Travis Althaus, just went over onto the owner's side. And we have been saying this to trade contractors for years, and he's one of them. And he just posted, I just learned that 70 to 80% of the cost of a building is actually on the O&M side. And I'm like, Trav, I love you, man. We've been preaching this,
Matt,
forever.
For years.
Years, man. But just like when I said I go between the two, you have to walk a mile in the shoes. That's why Jacob is, you know, one of the co-hosts here. That's why, Robert, we bring people like you on to sort of do our best to let people know, like, this is such a, and, you know, not for nothing, it's so complicated. Like, you have a team of 27 people. You have GCs. Gosh knows how many trade contractors you have, how many service contractors you have, how much operations you have. Like, this stuff's not easy. It's complicated. That's part of it.
Yep. So, Jacob, now, I know Jeff, he ready to go at you a little bit, but I'm gonna help you out, Jake. I can't believe this, but Jeff, this is what I at the beginning when I said there's so many versions or definitions of what people call it, digital twins, that when I go speak, I tell people, I'm not really gonna give you a definition. I'm not really wanting to talk about that, because I can go look at a freaking Matterport space, and by definition, a 3D replica of something, that's a digital twin. So all the years that I've been doing point clouds, I have a digital replica, so I have a digital twin, right? Then you're going to start seeing people say, well, if you got this, you got that. Well, define that for me. I can't. Well, shut up.
Best way to make somebody who believes they're an expert go quiet is ask them to explain it to you.
All right, so I'll explain it.
No, Jeff, I'm not asking you.
No, but this is kind of tying it all together here, is the way that we approach it and we look at it. And Jeff, you even used the word accessible. We look at digital twins as a centralized access point for all your data. It's not a single source of truth. That is the biggest bullshit term I've ever heard in my life. You can't have a single source of truth. There are some things your CMMS is going to be your source of truth for. There's some things your BMS is going to be your source of truth for. It's going to vary depending on your owner. But a digital twin can actually be the centralized point of accessing all that building data. So if you integrate it to to a central access point, then you're able to kind of use it in a different way. You don't have to tell your CMMS team anymore, hey, you're sorry, you can't put the data in there. It's going to only read it from the digital twin now, which is never going to, it's not realistic. But let them have their workflow. Let them keep doing the way they've been doing it. And now we read whatever that authoritative source is into the digital twin. And then we can compare it to the BMS and we can compare it to your IWMS. The 3D aspect is just another data source, right? So now you're not saying, we're not saying 3D has to be part of it. BIM provides a huge foundational database from design and construction to create it. It's important to do it correctly, but no, you don't have to have 3D. It's just another data source to be accessed in that central point. And so that's where we really, you know, we really see it, because we can't go in and tell owners and clients, you have to change your workflow. You know what? That CMMS that you invested so much money in, it's not the source of truth anymore. This is going to be the source of truth.
Let's back up for a second about the 3D model. Okay. So COVID hit, right? And I do want to preface what we're about to say up. If anybody has had a family member, I'm sorry, but we have to talk about this. So COVID hit, and as us for technology, should be thankful for COVID. Unfortunately, it happened, but we should be thankful. But that said, we had an early retirement here where a lot of our institutional knowledge took early retirements. And so when you bring in a bunch of new people, they don't know the facility. They don't know what a lot of things are. And so if you don't have the 3D model of things like that, it's hard to be able to get them to these various locations. However, if I can have a conversation with a new tech before we even go out there, say, man, this is on this floor I'm talking about over here in this room, it's a lot easier. So I don't want to say that they're not relative. They are relative. It's just relative of how you utilize it. And so I was kind of getting a sense that all three of us is kind of saying something that I don't want the people to get. What we're saying is different. We're all liking it, but there has to be its use.
Yep. Yeah. The geospatial location of an asset is very, very important information, valuable information. To understand where it is and then also what you need to access it saves time left and right in the operations of a building.
Well, and you hit on something else that we talk about on the construction side, because we see it so much when it comes to skilled labor, is, you know, COVID showed us something else. And what you said is it's a warning sign that our experience can leave. And it can leave at any time, and we are the ones who will be left holding the bag. And that's true in facilities, that's true in construction, that's true in the trades, that's true everywhere. So what you're doing is codifying it by doing and investing and growing and capturing that. You're actually capturing the experience. You can take the next generation of people that are working in your facility and superpower them really fast. You know, especially as digital natives, as they come up, many of the things you're going to be training them on aren't how to find it, aren't how to use a GIS or GPS or something to get to the location. It's going to be actually how to work on it, right? What that little quirky thing does that, well, you know, the manual says it does this, but, you've been around this machine for 20 years and you got to kick it here and punch it there, and then she'll work, you know? And that's the kind of stuff that, like, we, you know, having great data, having great centralized information and ability to access it gives you a way to keep upskilling those people. And it's got to be great to see happening for the facilities folks and for the, you know, the operations.
Jim, why you bring that up? You made me think of the old Nintendo tapes when we were blowing it.
Do you remember when you had to, like, take the pencil and stick it in to hold it down, you know, so it stayed in? Yeah,
you hold your breath.
Jacob's going, I don't know that I remember that. I think I was like six.
No, no, come on now. All the years of Botox makes me look younger than I really am. So.
Oh my gosh. Well, hey guys, listen, this was awesome. Robert, I want you to wrap it up a little bit. Just kind of give a look into the future where things might be going, what you're excited about. And then, you know, if you're speaking or you want people to connect with you, where can they find you?
So, once again, I'm at DFW Airport. So my email address is rlbrown@dfwairport.com. I don't know if y'all put that on the show notes or whatever, but that's the best way to give me. But futuristic, I'm going to just go from the talk about, there's a project, life cycle management, which I think some people don't understand that doesn't really associate with asset. That's only through the design and construction asset handover, and that part's done. Project asset life cycle management, that's that 80% or whatever. So futuristic, people are going to have to know how to bridge the gap between those two. And once you bridge the gap with those two, knowing that if this is the end of where I'm going, if I need to make sure that I account for that, all the way through the design construction process. So when that asset handover, we can close that. We can substantially complete that a lot faster, commissioning the whole gamut. So that's some of the things that I'm thinking futuristic, that the operational efficiency of what we're doing is going to get better. It just takes a little time, a little effort, but that's what I'm thinking right now.
I couldn't agree more. I have to thank you for being on the show today, Robert. Jacob, you know, thank you so much for bringing Robert on with us.
Absolutely.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Robert Brown. To read all our news stories, learn about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontactcrew.com. This is The Contact Crew, signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.